doubles. Already three RBIs, and he is looking like the Raptors' player of the game tonight. He has been incredible so far. Brings up Hiroto Kobayashi, and, well, it would have been if it hadn't been for a pinch hitter. So another pinch hitter for the Raptors, and it's Spencer Davis checking into the game. Davis pinch hitting for Kobayashi, and, well, I'll be interested to see if Davis comes and plays the field or what happens here, because Kobayashi, the right fielder tonight, not sure if that's where they want to put Davis, natural infielder, as this one is called for a strike on Davis to bring it an 0-1 down. And Kobayashi, he checks out of the game after a very strong night from him as well. He went 2-for-4 with two RBIs and a double. This one ripped over to first base on the ground, over back to second to the shortstop, and they get the force out of Matt Pinal, but reaching back to first base is Spencer Davis, and Pat Costin advances over to third. So on the fielder's choice, Costin goes from second to third, while Matt Pinal is out at second base, and Spencer Davis goes over to first. Fielder's choice is 3-6 in the books. Brings up the left-handed hitting Chris Diaz, center fielder for the Raptors. He's got runners on the corners with two outs as this pitch is on the inside edge, called for a strike. And we've seen that a couple of times. Diaz, he is pretty close up in the batter's box. He stands very near inside of the plate, and he's taken a lot of those inside pitches, but they get called for strikes. 0-1 count is a late swing and a foul back by Diaz to bring it now 0-2. Spencer Davis was taking off from first, trying to steal second base there, but not going to get the stolen base. So it's now an 0-2 count with still runners on the corners and two away. Diaz up at the plate. He gets the pitch, but swings and misses, and it's dropped behind, but picked up and tags him out for out number three. So the Raptors, they don't score any runs despite the two hits, no errors, and two left on base. As it's 12-5 when we come back, bottom of the eighth, you're on WFHR with Wisconsin Rapids.
Summer is here, and construction zones are everywhere. With crews working diligently, it's crucial to stay vigilant for nails and screws on the road. After all, a flat tire can quickly derail your day. If you discover a nail or screw in your tire, head straight to 8th Street Auto. Their expert team will not only assess your tire, but also conduct a thorough inspection of your vehicle to help prevent future issues. Trust the certified professionals at 8th Street Auto to ensure your vehicle is in top shape so you can hit the road confidently and fully prepared for your next adventure.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
You're listening to Raptors Baseball here on WFHR. Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric Inc., Party Envy, Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Comfort Air Heating Cooling Fireplaces, McCain, Stevens Point Brewery, Delta Dental, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Gamber Johnson, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Solaris, Aspirus Health, and the Food and Farm Exploration Center. Listen to Raptors Baseball here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Let's get back to the ballpark and more Wisconsin Rapids Raptors baseball on WFHR.
I'll tell you what, it could be a fun bus ride back, but the Raptors have to finish off this game. They have a lead of 7 runs in the bottom of the eighth inning, and they're turning to a fourth pitcher on the night, Brent Gallegos. And I'm starting to think right now, hey, it's keeping these guys hot because a lot of these guys haven't pitched in a little while. It's been a few days since we've seen a couple of these guys, and Gallegos, one of them, he hasn't pitched since June 4th. That was 6 days ago when he had gone back-to-back games on June 3rd and June 4th. He pitched 20 pitches on June 4th. He has not gone since then, so a full 5 days of rest in between, and you know, looking at the way that this game has gone, you didn't need to get rid of Jack Obrasky, who went one inning with one strikeout, didn't allow a base runner, and just faced those three batters on 12 pitches. So very limited usage from Obrasky, but just keeping the guys warm as that one's in there for strike number one to Drew Reynolds. And Gallegos, one of those guys. And so if that's the case, got to look at some of the other pitchers in the game who might be coming in. And maybe you'll see an Ashton Poole who hasn't pitched since June 5th, as this one is all for strike number two. It's an 0-2 count to Reynolds. So that's just a guess right there. You might also just see Brent Gallegos finish it out here. But we'll see what the decision is, as the 0-2 count is fouled back to keep it there. And along with that, Cannon Restine hasn't pitched since 4 days ago on June 6th. So he could be another option to close out the game. And oh, heck, Tony Torres hasn't gone in a couple of days. Probably wanting to keep that arm a little bit more on the sideline, as he went 34 pitches back on June 7th, so that was 3 days ago. Is again fouled back. It's Drew Reynolds fighting to stay alive. Bottom of the eighth inning here from Mequon, Wisconsin. Lake Michigan bringing in a little bit of a fog over the lights at night. This pitch missing inside, and that one hits him square in the back. So after four pitches that were all strikes, Drew Reynolds gets hit by a pitch and is on to first base with nobody out. That's the second time that we've seen one of those type of hit by pitches here with the two strikes and the pitcher ahead in the count. You saw it back when Espen Simpson hit Dylan Sales ahead in the count after two strikes. And now here in the eighth inning, after trying to keep this lead, Gallegos, one of the two-way players, has a runner off first and gets a swing and a miss to make it an 0-1 count. And looking at Gallegos and a little more in-depth about him, his last performance was, as I mentioned earlier, back on June 4th, where he went two shutout innings along two walks, but those were the only base runners. 0-1 count here is fouled back to make it 0-2. He hit a batter with a pitch here, but that's the only base runner so far, first batter that he's faced. He also, in last week in total, going from Monday through Sunday, this one comes inside, and that one hits Nate Gray again. So that's back-to-back 0-2 counts that Brent Gallegos has missed with a pitch and hit the batter. Oh, man, not the way that you want to see that go. Throws so many strikes and then just can't finish them off. That's got to hurt. One is a batter, obviously, taking a pitch, but also it's the pitcher to miss those. Brings up the center fielder, Jesse Aguirre, with runners on first and second and nobody out. And Gallegos, from June 1st to June 7th, three innings pitched, one run allowed. It was earned on one hit and four walks. So not a bad little stint from him. Is he's been a lot better than his first appearance as a Rafter, which was a little bit rough, at least on the mound. Not from the plate, though, as this one misses outside to Aguirre for ball number one. And Gallegos followed his assistant coach, Eric Robles, to the Rafters, both of them from Butte College. 1-0 count coming home. It is on the outside edge, called for strike number one, a 1-1 count. And Gallegos did a little bit of both pitching and hitting. Robles works a little bit more with the hitters than the pitchers, but he knows that Gallegos could do it, and so does Mike Spears, the pitching coach. This one comes inside and nearly hits Jesse Aguirre. But instead, the count runs to 2-1, and Gallegos has got to be watching out for those hit batters, and so Mike Spears is going to come out here and talk with Gallegos to make sure that he's got it in line and ready to go. So Spears going to have a chat with Gallegos. So is Nick Adrian. And Nick Adrian, been having a good game behind the plate. and he's been loving this experience that he's been getting after having to sit out this past year at Gardner-Webb and getting to see a lot of reps behind the plate. It's great for his career, he hopes. And, well, he came in along with the two other catchers back for opening day. The Raptors had all three of their catchers on opening day, and that cannot be said the same about the other position groups, as Ziggy liked to call it, the skeleton crew. But they've gotten a lot more reinforcements. They called it cavalry. As this one's ripped over to first base, could be two. Pinal back over to shortstop to Parker, and Parker can't find anyone covering first base, so he keeps the ball in his glove, and they get the fielder's choice lead runner. Not quite the lead runner, actually. It's 3-6 on the putout as Jesse Aguirre goes to first. Drew Reynolds does actually advance over from second to third. And it's Nate Gray that's thrown out at second base. And Dylan Sales now up to the plate. Sales has been hit by a pitch his last two times up at the plate. And this one's hit towards center field, and that drops down for a hit. It'll be an RBI single for Dylan Sales as Drew Reynolds comes home to score and cut into this lead by one run. It's 12-6 in the bottom of the eighth. Jesse Aguirre goes over to second base on the hit. Sales is on first, and there's one away with runners on first and second for the right-handed hitter, Beckett Zvorek. Zvorek, the shortstop for the Chinooks. It's a righty-righty matchup. Pitch comes home, and it is on the inside edge, called for strike number one. Zvorek, 2-for-4 on the day already, looking for his third hit of the night. Has an RBI and a stolen base as well. 0-1 count is in there for strike number two. So it's an 0-2 count. One away, and runners on first and second. Pitch comes here, and that one's sent into right field, and sliding, it gets all the way past the right fielder for the Raptors as this one comes all the way in, and it's going to end up being two bases. An RBI double, as sliding out there was J.J. Garcia after the defensive movement. Garcia had gone to right field.
Catcher Dominic Kibler.
And it gets by him. This is Garcia's first time in the outfield this season. So it ends up being an RBI double there. Could have potentially been less than that. But either way, now runners on second and third with one out here in the bottom of the eighth. It's 12-7. The Raptors lead dissolving a little bit here, but they still have a hefty advantage. But runners on second and third, home run would make this a really close game. 1-0 count to Dominic Kibler. You've got to watch out at this point. And this one is hit towards left field, and that's going to get down. So here goes one run, a second run coming around to score as well, and it's all of a sudden a three-run game. A four spot in the bottom of the eighth by the Chinooks have made it 12-9. A two RBI single from Dominic Kibler sends home Dylan Sales and Beckett Zvorek. 1-0 count to Coase after that one, and this one is fouled back to bring it 1-1. Runner on first base with one out. It's a three-run game. Brent Gallegos trying to work out of this inning. Hit the first two batters with pitches and misses this one inside to bring it 1-1. Coase is from the Masters. Left-handed hitter. The designated hitter. He's already got a home run on the day. The two-run shot in the fifth inning off of Marshy. This one misses inside for ball number two. It's a 2-1 count. But that home run is his only time on base of the game. So when he got on base, he didn't stay for long. 2-1 count, ripped foul down the first base line, and now goes 2-2. So 2-2 count with one away, runner on first base, and the Rafters really trying to finish this one out. They've been feeling so good about their season in this game so far, and this one fouled back. Frank Gallegos coming in for Jack Obrasky, and the Rafters, they've got a man warming up in the bullpen down there, and I believe that's Keenan Restine, if I'm seeing correctly. And the runner taking off from first. This one's hit towards right field. And right there is Garcia. He'll make the catch. Throw it back into first. Can they get him? Yeah, they do. They double him up. Dominic Kibler was trying to take off on a stolen base. But he was caught out on the flyout from Jacob Coase. So that's three outs in the inning. And the danger is over. Four runs come home to score on the three hits. There were no errors, and there was nobody left on base. It's 12-9 as we hit the ninth inning. Rafters trying to finish this one off when we come back here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Summer. It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store. Then listen in for the keywords during the 7 and 11 a.m. hour and 2 and 4 p.m. hour. Text in the keyword and get set to win. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to Wisconsin Rapids Rafters Baseball on WFHR.
It seemed like the Rafters had this one in the bag. However, that can't quite be said at the moment right now. It's a three-run game. We still have the lead in the top of the ninth inning, but the Rafters offense hoping to get rolling along as Nick Adrian leads off against a new pitcher on mound. It's Nate Ciemne. As Adrian fouls this one away to make it 0-1, and Nate Ciemne takes over after Logan Schofer performs well. Schofer went two innings without allowing a run for the Chinooks. That was what they needed, as this one is fouled away again by Adrian to make it 0-2. And a quick mound visit here between the catcher and his pitcher as they just make sure that they're on the right page. So, taking some time to get things over with, and now it looks like we're ready to go as Nate Ciemne gets back out there and Dominic Kibler steps back behind the plate. It's still an 0-2 count to Nick Adrian, despite that. So just making sure that everything's all good to go. And now that it is, Ciemne getting ready to fire. Brings the ball into his glove and sends it home and gets a swing and a miss for strike number three as Adrian goes down on three pitches. It brings up J.J. Garcia to the plate. right-handed batter against the righty pitcher on the mound. And with one away, the bases are empty for the Rafters. Up three runs in the top of the ninth. It's 12-9. Miami looking to bring it home, and it is a little inside for ball number one, a 1-0 count. Garcia is one of the only Rafters who has been struggling today. Still been getting a hit on the ball outside of his last plate appearance. He's 0-4 in the game as this one misses low and away to bring it 2-0. But, as I mentioned, Garcia had put the ball in play. Prior to that, he blew out to right field, a 6-3 ground out, a pop-up, and then struck out, but it was on five pitches, and all of them were strikes, just attacking the zone. 2-0, we hit into left field, and that gets off of the glove of the diving shortstop and rolls into left for a one-out single. One away, and a runner on first for the Rafters as Mason Onati steps into the batter's box. Onati still looking for his first hit of the night. He is 0-2, but has reached three times, all on walks. On first base, Garcia gets a little bit of a leadoff, doesn't take, and that pitch high for ball number one to Onati. Onati, his last two plate appearances have both ended with him walking. Same with his first plate appearance in the fourth inning. It's a 1-0 count and misses outside to bring it 2-0. On deck, Noah Ruiz, if it gets to him. Onati hoping to avoid the double play, if not anything else. Left-handed hitter from Pensacola State. Lefty-righty matchup is in there for strike number one. It's a 2-1 count. And Onati, that's one of the best things that he does, is take pitches and work counts. A little surprised not to have seen Garcia try and take off. The Rafters are a very quick team, and here goes Garcia, but it's a foul back by Onati to bring the count 2-2. And so Garcia will head on back to first base after the attempt was canceled. 2-2 for Onati. Garcia might take off again, and he will. This time, again, it's fouled off, and Garcia, you can kind of see him pulling up there at the end. Like, man, let me take off here. But Mason Onati's got to stay alive at the plate. I assume Garcia's done running for at least a pitch or two now. It's a 2-2 count with one away in the top of the ninth. Pickoff attempt back to first base, and well, that maybe not the time to try and pick him off after he just got done running twice in a row. He's probably not going to try and take off again, that's what I was saying, but you never know. That's why you got to try it. Keep him on the bag. 2-2 count. And a swing and a miss from Onati puts him down on strikes. It's the second strikeout of the ninth inning for Nate Ciemi. And there's two away in the top of the ninth with a runner on first base for Noah Ruiz. Noah Ruiz, 2-for-5 in the game so far. Both singles, but he does have an RBI. 20 RBIs for him on the season. Garcia taking off, and Ruiz fouls it back. Garcia puts his hand on his head like, man, give me a chance here. But Ruiz thought he had that one timed up. Couldn't quite get the piece on it like he had hoped for. So it's an 0-1 count. Garcia back to first base. 0-1, two away. Ruiz trying to pick up hit number three in the game. Garcia gets caught in between the base paths. Throw down to first. He'll dive head first, try and swim. And he's safe. He swum around the tag. J.J. Garcia, the swim move to avoid the tag at second base. And he's safe with a stolen bag after getting picked off first. So the Rafters now have a runner in scoring position with two away as the man who leads the Northwoods League in RBIs is at the plate. This pitch comes inside and it knocks the helmet off of Ruiz as he gets hit. And a hit by pitch up in that area is scary, especially because Ashton Zacher was put under concussion protocol by a pitch that hit him in the helmet earlier in the week. And Ruiz walks on down to first. Now, that one didn't hit him squarely the way that Zacher got hit squarely in the head, because Ruiz was ducking out of the way on that one, and it looks like it just bounced and knocked his helmet off. But still, not what you want to see. And the hit-by-pitch puts a runner on first and second for the Rafters with two outs, as Pat Costin back into the batter's box. Left foot on the back edge of the zone, and that one called for strike number one. Costin, one for one in the game. He singled back in the eighth inning. Stranded at third before the inning ended. Ruiz on first base. Garcia on second. The 0-1 is called for a strike to bring it 0-2. Costin, pinch hit for Madden Ocko back in the eighth inning. Ocko had gone 2-for-4 with an RBI and a double with two runs score. And this one is popped foul straight back and out of play. No, looks like they're going to call it a balk. So prior to the pitch, a balk sends Noah Ruiz from first over to second and sends J.J. Garcia from second to third. Runners on second and third with two outs, an 0-2 count to Pat Costin, and he gets a swing and a miss for strike number three. And once again, it's a strikeout the side moment for the Chinooks. This time, it's Nate Ciemne who does it. No runs on the one hit, no errors, and two left on base. As we hit the bottom of the ninth, three outs to go. The Rafters up three when we return here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
It's June Dairy Month, and though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our state with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cow's milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official milk plant. 1894 in the Waupun area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer-owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheesemaking. So did you guess? Most of her cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you. Celebrating our dairy farmers with this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Now, back to more Wisconsin Rapids Rafters baseball on WFHR.
I Ashton Poole onto the mound for the Raptors. He's going to try and lock it down for the save as it's 12-9 in the bottom of the ninth inning. This pitch across for strike number one. The man leading off the ninth inning for the Chinooks, it's Esteban Garcia. Garcia will be followed by Tyler Preece with Drew Reynolds batting third in the inning. 0-1 count. This one's hit into center field, running up on it. Diaz, and he'll let it bounce in front of him for a leadoff single. Esteban Garcia goes to first base, and it brings up Tyler Preece with nobody out and a runner on first. And the Raptors were feeling really good heading into the eighth inning. They led 12-5, but four runs came across on Brent Gallegos' line, and he came out of the game after that. Tyler Preece at the plate, the right-handed batter, takes the pitch outside for ball number one. And Brent Gallegos, his night, went one inning, four runs allowed on three hits, no walks, no strikeouts, two hit by pitches. Seven batters faced, 24 pitches, as that one is on the outside edge, called for strike number one to Preece. Ashton Poole coming in to lock it down, and well, Poole has not had the start to his Raptors career that he had been hoping for, but hasn't been helped out with errors that were made, as this one's popped up in foul territory. Runner was taking off for second. It's caught by Pinal. He'll flip it on back to first base where Poole was covering. It's a double play. Once again, it's a fly ball that's caught, and the runner was trying to take off. So two away in the bottom of the ninth, and the Chinooks are down to their last out. Drew Reynolds into the batter's box, the left-handed hitting first baseman. With nobody on and two away, the breaking ball is in there for strike number one. Reynolds 0-for-2 in the game with two hit-by-pitches. Flew out to right field, and he grounded out 4-3. 0-1 count. This one sent down to first base, and this should do it for three straight. And Pinal will step on the bag. The Raptors have won three in a row, all on the road. Oh, man, they are feeling good right now, and it is going to be a fun bus ride back to Wisconsin Rapids tonight. Final score, Raptors win 12-9, and Ashton Poole locks it down for the save. Noah Marschke, the first Raptors starter to record a win, and that is going to do it for what was a phenomenal game for the Raptors and a great two-game series. Raptors win both of them here in Lakeshore, and that means it's time for the post-game show. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, post-game look at the way that it all happened, a breakdown of the scoring, and a look at the stats, and a look forward to next game when we come back here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Breaking sports radio show news coming across the ticker. In a move for the ages, 105.5 WIRI has traded for playmakers. Join us 4 to 5 Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. Hit us in the numbers by calling with your sports takes and feelings. We'll have James, Randy, Michael, and Seth bringing you local sports coverage and news that you won't hear anywhere else. Thanks to our friends at Quality Plus Printing and Family Natural Foods. Be heard 4 to 5 every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on 105.5 WIRI's newest roster edition, Playmakers. We speak sports.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies.
Ah! You!
And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
This is the chef of love, Chef Gennard, TV host and restaurateur. My grandparents harvested their land to sell food and shared its overflowing bounty with our community. Grandma said, for every yam we pick, we give one away. In the world they cultivated, I love preparing and eating dinner with my family on Sundays. When our resources change, food assistance programs sustained us. They gave me fuel to start my first culinary business at 16 years old and inspiration to donate the extra food in my community. Through my life, I've developed an appetite to work with others to ensure everyone has access to the nutritious food we need to thrive. Together, we can help end hunger. Come on, join the movement with Feeding America by volunteering, donating, and advocating. Learn more at feedingamerica.org/act now.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Let's get back to the rafters here on WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
What a night for the Rafters as they win 12-9 over the Lakeshore Chinooks. It's their third straight win after they took down the Chinooks in the game one of the series last night. They come back and they do the same thing here. They win 12-9, and well, it started off thanks to Noah Marshke's 5 innings pitched. He was a big reason behind it. Let's go looking back through how it happened. The first 3 innings really cruised by us. First inning went 1-2-3. Second inning 1-2-3 for both teams. Both of them had a perfect game into the third inning, but the Rafters were the first to get a base runner. It was a leadoff single from Chris Diaz, although he was caught stealing third, so it was 3-up, 3-down in the third inning. And to the bottom of the third, the Chinooks get their first runner thanks to an error by the Rafters shortstop Eric Parker. And Aguirre, Jesse Aguirre, he reached first, stole second, reached third on a wild pitch, came home to score on the RBI single from Beckett Zavorek. That was the first hit of the game for the Chinooks. And an unearned run on Noah Marshke's line. Fourth inning comes around, though. The Rafters down 1-0. They put up a 6-spot. They scored 6 runs on 6 hits in the fourth inning thanks to an RBI double from Matt Inocco, RBI single from Eric Parker, 2 RBI double from Matt Pinal, RBI triple from Chris Diaz, and RBI single from Nick Adrian. Everyone was getting involved right there and took a 6-1 lead into the bottom of the fourth, but the Chinooks added 2 more runs to cut it back down 6-3. Those 2 runs came in on an RBI walk with the bases loaded from Nate Gray and a bases loaded hit by pitch of Dylan Sales. That made it 6-3. Top of the fifth comes around. The Rafters add 2 more runs. It was those runs that came home on an RBI single from Hiroto Kobayashi and an RBI sack fly from Chris Diaz. Made it an 8-3 lead, but Chinooks wouldn't go away. They scored 2 more runs in the bottom of the fifth thanks to a 2-run shot from Jacob Coase, made it 8-5. Sixth inning comes around, and the Rafters once again add some more runs. They score 4 runs in the inning. RBI single from Noah Ruiz, RBI single from Eric Parker, RBI double from Matt Pinal, and an RBI double from Hiroto Kobayashi. That made it a 12-5 lead into the bottom of the sixth. Bottom of the sixth comes around, and the Rafters turn to the bullpen, and Espen Simpson, a shutout sixth inning. Seventh inning, the Rafters are finally shut down. They don't score again the rest of the game. It was 12-5, and they were held scoreless the rest of the way. So sixth inning, the Rafters turn to Espen Simpson. He had a shutout sixth inning. Seventh inning, it was 1-2-3 for Jack Obrasky. 3-up, 3-down, it was a perfect frame. Eighth inning comes around, and Brent Gallegos comes into the game. He struggles a little bit out there. Hit by pitch, fielder's choice, RBI single from Dylan Sales. They score one run. They score another run on an RBI single from Beckett Zvorek. And then it was a two RBI single from Dominic Kibler to make a four-run eighth inning, cut it to 12-9. And then the ninth inning comes around after Ashton Poole comes into the game. Poole goes three up, three down. Despite allowing the single, it was a double play on the pop-out from Tyler Priest that ended the game. And Drew Reynolds, the last batter up, he grounded three unassisted. That ended the game, and thanks to the double play earlier in the frame. So Ashton Poole gets the save in a three-run game. He didn't allow a run. The win goes to Noah Marski. The loss goes to Jack Hagen, the starter for the Chinooks, who was perfect. Well, nine up, nine down through three innings. And then fourth inning comes around, and he got taken care of by the Rafters, to say the least. The Rafters offense looking great. Taking a look back at the stats from tonight's game, let's look at the box score, where the Rafters had six players with multiple hits. Chris Diaz went 2-for-4 with two RBIs. Hiroto Kobayashi 2-for-4 with two RBIs. Matthew Pinal went 3-for-4 with three RBIs and two doubles and two runs scored. Eric Parker 2-for-4 with three runs scored and two RBIs. Madden Ako 2-for-4 with two runs. Noah Ruiz 2-for-5 with two runs as well. He also got hit by a pitch that was on base three times in the game. Overall, a great performance from the Rafters offense. On the pitching side, Noah Marshy, five innings, allowing five runs, four earned on four hits and two walks. He struck out four. Espen Simpson, one shutout inning. Jack Obrasky, one shutout inning with a strikeout. Brent Gallegos, four runs allowed in one inning. And Ashton Poole, one inning of shutout ball. And that is all for the stats and numbers from tonight's game. Taking a look ahead to the next game. Well, tomorrow, it's an off day. The first off day of the season for the Rafters. It's well-deserved as they have been heading into this one on a tear. They are winning three in a row now and hoping to keep it up. Their next game will be on the road at Wausau, and they'll finally return home to Witter Field on June 13th. That'll be on Friday when they take on Wausau at home. Next game up on Thursday at Wausau, it's going to be Kenny Schultz on the mound for the Rafters going up against Landon Sexton for the Woodchucks. That's the matchup. Kenny Schultz back on the rubber. So excited to get to see him pitch again. He's been one of the best pitchers in the Northwoods League to start off the year. So a big game comes up next, and that one, of course, interdivisional. Taking a look at the standings as we are, the Green Bay Rockers and Traverse City Pit Spitters went to extras. The Rockers leading 8-6 in the bottom of the 10th right now, and that could be a big one, because if the Rockers were to have lost after this win, they would be even with the Rafters in the standings. Rafters improved to 7-9 on the year, while Lakeshore drops to 4-12. Big time wins for the Rafters, as they have now won three in a row. The final score from tonight, 12-9, and that's going to do it for us from Mequon, Wisconsin. A big thank you to everyone who supports the Rafters throughout the season and for tuning in to these broadcasts. It's always a great pleasure to be able to broadcast these games. A big thank you to Lakeshore for hosting us and for the hospitality that they provided, and of course to my great Rafters co-workers and bosses back in Wisconsin Rapids. It's always a great experience working there, and a big thank you to WFHR as well. But that's going to do it for us tonight. For myself, Austin Thomas, and from the entire rest of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters organization, thank you, and have a great rest of your night.
When we're stuck in traffic, that's a waste of our time, but also the cost of getting goods to and from markets. We know we could have it much better. We also know more modern infrastructure, the beyond just the basics that we've had for now, but the infrastructure of the future, the broadband wireless, the industries that we expect, the silicon, the chips that we expect. So that's where I would invest, things that are public goods that are going to benefit everyone, but really are where the most modern economies need, is sort of the cutting edge, and that private investment won't do a good enough job on its own. So when you have all those things coming together, that's where the public should invest. And it's clear that that's what most Americans want to happen. Now, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we're seeing public investment withering right now. You know, Biden made a small step towards what we need, but under Donald Trump and DOGE, we're actually cutting the kinds of things that, that would provide, in my opinion, lasting economic benefits for the public.
No, it's one of those things that, you know, right when Trump took office the first time around, they were floating this idea, and I'm sure you may remember, of like a $3 trillion investment package. Now, I didn't agree with how they were trying to gimmick that to happen, but the fact that we needed $3 trillion back then in 2017 was accurate, was spot on. The American Society of Civil Engineers actually said we needed about $3.6 trillion. We're up to about almost $5 trillion in need now. So the longer we wait, the more expensive it gets. But again, as you've pointed out, we the populace, we want these investments. And, you know, personally, I think about, not a huge Thomas Friedman fan, but I liked his analogy of saying, look, you know, we used to be a country that pushed the technological edge. We did things that moved us in the right direction. And he said that, you know, he had gone from Beijing to LAX, and it was like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. That's how far we've fallen behind. So for me, there's a great opportunity of a message to go, yeah, we could be that Jetsons if we so chose.
We were certainly the closer to the Jetsons, America. We were at the cutting edge. We still are in a lot of respects, but we have, in order to maintain that, that is not something that just inevitably is going to happen. It takes public investment as part of it. And, you know, that's the real question to me, among the real questions, is whether we're going to maintain that edge we have. And are we going to do it in a way that benefits all Americans? Because being at the cutting edge, I can understand some frustration. Being at the cutting edge of technology for the past 20 or 30 years has not done enough for most Americans, because the gains, again, have gone just to the top. So when we make the investments in infrastructure, we also need to make the investments in unions, a higher minimum wage, et cetera. And so that's partly why we put out the report, highlighting not only the college and non-college support very similar things, but there's, I think, a pretty clear package of policies that we think hang together. There's, you know, things making work pay, the minimum wage, unions. There's also taxing the rich more to pay for goods that everyone else depends upon, the infrastructure, but also improvements in Medicaid. So we have health care and can depend on it and aren't, you know, subject to the whims of the worst system, where if you lose your job, you might lose all your health insurance.
Yeah, and you bring up health insurance. That's, again, another one of those things that you guys looked at in your polling. And look, expanding Medicaid, it had strong support. Everybody I talked to can't believe the administration is going in this direction. You know, what did you come up with? You know, because, again, this is, for me, I believe everybody wants virtually the same kind of stuff. Healthcare, a strong safety net. That stuff seems to be popular across college educated, non-college educated. What did you find on those fronts?
I mean, why aren't we getting what we want? We didn't look into why our democracy is not delivering what most Americans want. You know, I've got our hunches, and we've talked a little bit about this, but the political coalitions that run both parties don't really care as much as they could or should about ordinary the economics of most Americans. And so we need, in my mind, to have our figure out changes that are going to make our democracy more responsive to actually what citizens want. And we've harped on a lot of kind of changes that, you know, go into there, but this is where you and I agree. Part of the key changes here are unions, because when more workers are in unions, they're stronger voice politically. Politicians are much more likely to listen to them. And one of the good things that's happening today is that both parties are starting to compete for unionized workers. For a long time, Democrats sort of owned the union vote. And a handful of Republicans, in my mind, nowhere near enough, but a handful of Republicans have started to say, we are going to try to win unionized voters with even sometimes doing the right kind of policy. And so if we had all politicians actually wanting to win workers and unionized workers, that would be a big step towards making our democracy function better.
No, I agree with you. You know, I go back to the Eisenhower quote, you know, that anybody who comes out against, you know, labor unions, unemployment, Social Security, they wouldn't be heard from in our political history. He goes on to say there are a few Texas oil millionaires and rich people and a few politicians, but their numbers back then were negligible and they are stupid. was his line. Sadly, Stupid seems to be running one entire party and a good portion of the other. So I'm hoping someone takes this information. Some political leaders out there go, hey, I read David Madeline's report. Maybe this could be a way towards electoral victory, you think?
Well, so I just had an event where I had a discussion with Representative Greg Kassar, who is the chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, basically the left wing of the Democratic Party in the House, and Representative Nikki Budinski, who is a vice chair for the New Democrats, basically the more centrist Democratic wing in the House. And I had an event discussing this report and sort of how to win working class voters. And both of them focused on the need to improve economic policy. And both of them talked about minimum wage and especially unions and higher taxes. So both of these are young leaders. They were elected in 2023 to the House. So I see some potential, and they represent large constituencies. They're especially, Budinski represents a working class district, but they also represent the biggest constituency groups within the House Democratic Caucus, over 100 members of Congress in both of their groups. So yes, I see some potential to really focus on this set of issues. We're not there yet by any stretch of the imagination, but I have some optimism.
I hope you're right. I hope there are some Republicans who are moving their party in the direction of supporting labor. I see it right now as just rhetorical. I don't see any action, any true action, but we'll see. And I hope it's a wake-up call for Democrats to get their heads out of their behind and start returning to their roots. But I hope folks will check out the piece, Working Class and College Educated Voters Want New Progressive Economic Policies, written by David Madeline and the team over at the American Worker Project. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You think this is the way forward? I mean, after all, this is what we've been saying for about 20 years now. So maybe they'll wake up to it. We'll see. Want to hear your thoughts? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day that the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a decision that would have massive implications for American workers. The case was known as Anderson v. Mount Clemens Pottery. The pottery company was operated on a large 8-acre property in Mount Clemens, Michigan. Each day, the workers punched into their shifts and then had to make their way to their workstations. There, they had to get ready to work, perhaps donning gloves, sharpening tools, or readying their workstations. The company estimated that these tasks took 14 minutes. So, they subtracted 14 minutes from the workers' timesheets each day. 7 workers had enough and decided to sue the company, with backing from their union. They argued that they should be compensated for their entire time, including the time it took to prepare for work. The Supreme Court agreed with the workers. Justice Frank Murphy wrote the decision for the court. He himself was from Michigan and had previously been the mayor of Detroit and the governor of the state. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court case was not the last word on the matter. In 1994, the State Bar of Michigan and the Macomb County Bar Association helped erect a historic marker commemorating this important case. It described what happened after Justice Murphy's determination. Quote, the following year, Congress, responding to the Mount Clemens Pottery decision, enacted the Portal to Portal Act to relieve employers of the obligation to pay for time spent in non-productive activities, except where such activities are compensable through custom or contract, notably through collective bargaining. In other words, Congress passed a law undermining the court's protection of workers.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So again, this is what we've been talking about for a very long time. You know, we've been fed all of this division. We've been fed divide and conquer. And the reality is, you know, I do agree with the frame that we're not all that much different. It's just we've put ourselves into camps. And look, I'm in a camp as well. I believe in life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. I believe that in this country, you should be able to do whatever you want. As long as your rights don't infringe on mine, we're good. And I think we can do that. We used to. Somehow it's you know, the 24-hour right-wing rage machine giving us our 2 minutes hate 24 hours a day. That's got us off what really is important. And I point to the quote that's often attributed to Jay Gould, the railroad magnate from the 1880s and 1890s. I can easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. We're witnessing that. And, you know, during the break, you know, I mentioned to David, I go, you know, when, you know, because I was curious if he had the number. I said, you know, what was union density back when yellow dog contracts were allowed? And he goes, well, higher than it is now. So when it was basically illegal, when an employer could fire you for signing a union card, for saying that you wanted to identify as a union member, you could be fired for that, legally fired for that. Union density was higher than it is now. And why is that? Especially when you consider the fact that union approval ratings are through the roof. 70-some percent of people approve of unions. A huge number of people want to join unions. Even people who aren't going to be in unions understand the benefits. So why isn't union density higher? And the truth of the matter is, over the 90 years that the National Labor Relations Act has been in place, it's been eroded away to the point to where the law's not on your side. The original intent was to get people to join and form unions, to join, to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, conditions, to share in the wealth. That idea of working hard, playing by the rules, and you get ahead is actually something, regardless of your educational attainment level, something that we kind of believe in. And it shows in their poll. Now, for me, we talked about this yesterday on the program, about, you know, what agenda we should be following. I've said, you know, many times, strong union rates. Yeah, that's great. We need that. We need a higher minimum wage. We need stronger social safety net, better Medicaid, better Medicare. You know, maybe a national health program. Maybe a way to ensure that safety net is there in emergency times. But for me, the big one is always you need to undo, you know, the 40 plus years of Reaganomics. You need to go back and have a very high top marginal tax rate, because you cannot have, in a democratic society where we've now ruled, thanks to Citizens United, that money is speech. You can't have a system where one guy has so much more speech. And Elon Musk, to me, is that poster child. When you can spend $280 million and the threat of throwing $1 million or $1 billion or whatever at a congressional race or a Senate race or whatever, kind of a big deal. And the fact that you have one person with that kind of outweighted wealth is not good for democracy. And I think, look, across educational attainment levels, everyone, I think, agrees. It's just a matter of now. If you had politicians who, I don't know, number of Democrats who might get their heads out of their behinds, might actually stand up for the working class, might not be a bad idea. Might not be a bad idea to have working class centric policies, considering we're still the majority. You still need people to show up and go to work and do those jobs and make sure that the economy runs. Seems sane, rational. Seems easy, but in a time where we're chasing the almighty campaign dollar, that's what's gotten hard. So for me, again, Citizens United, a huge, huge obstacle in getting where we need to go. But ultimately, it's us. It's you. It's me. It's us demanding better. And I hope folks will check out David Madeline's piece over there at AmericanProgress.org. Because, look, I think this is the way forward. I've been saying this for a while. You know, pretty much every year that I've been doing this show, this is the pathway to working class solidarity, to uniting this country and returning a working class to a prosperous working class. And maybe we tap down some of the anger. Maybe we find each other again. Maybe Thanksgiving won't be as ugly in the future. if we take off the red and blue hats, put on a union hat. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Amid ICE raids and detentions that have sparked protests, California Governor Gavin Newsom says if some people can be snatched off the streets without a warrant based on only on suspicion or skin color, then none of us is safe.
Authoritarian regimes begin by targeting people who are least able to defend themselves, but they do not stop there.
He has tried to, in court, stop President Trump's order sending National Guard troops and Marines. Meantime, Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass has announced a curfew from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. It's in a one-square-mile section of the downtown Los Angeles area.
Some of the imagery of the protests and the violence gives the appearance as though this is a citywide crisis, and it is not.
During a visit to Fort Bragg to celebrate the Army's 250th birthday, President Trump has told soldiers,
"What you're witnessing in California is a full-blown assault on peace, on public order, and a national